Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm as well. Coming up on this Thursday edition, the animals, they're still angry. Shark attacks are up, and so are alligator attacks, and it's on both coasts. We've got some details about that. Also, there's a lot of chemicals in our houses, just common household chemicals. Some of them are pretty dangerous, linked to some chronic diseases in men in particular. We'll have details about that study. Also, have you ever heard of the helicopter parents? It could be a problem. That and more, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Thanks for joining us there at those locations. Also, if you'd like to, you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm and email us comments at kpcg.fm. We appreciate getting those. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. And last night, we're having a youth camp going on this campus here at Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, where we're broadcasting from. And each camp session, they take a night to kind of go around and look at some of the different functionings, I guess, of the campus. They did that last night. Grant, you went along and kind of saw some of it. How did that go?
It was definitely a worthwhile use of my evening. I thought all three presentations that I got to go to were really enlightening and engaging. Started off with the Herbert W. Armstrong College Registrar giving a presentation about the college and just how students here are genuinely active and living the abundant life. And I think he inspired a lot of those young ladies in the room to hopefully apply one day. And he also gave five tips on how to prepare for that if they wanted to attend. And then I went over down the road to a presentation about Imperial Academy from the assistant principal. And he talked about how it's more interactive for online students than it is for any other sort of homeschool program. For example, whenever you're dissecting animals in biology class, each online student actually has a kit to do the exact same thing at home.
Oh, wow.
For the annual science fair, local students and online students are sending in videos of their experiments. So it is almost like both sets of students, the ones here locally and the ones who are tuning in on the computer live, are able to participate in the exact same activities. So he really did bring that out in an interesting way. And also at the end of that segment, he played a Price is Right type game, IA version with different facts about how many graduates there have been or what year the school started. Dorm 5B won that one, so that was pretty exciting for them. Then after the Imperial Academy presentation, I went down the hall in the same building to a presentation from the True Education Youth Magazine managing editor. He basically previewed for the girls in that room the next two issues of the True Education. Everyone was really excited to see that before the magazine actually landed in their mailboxes. And then he asked for a lot of different ideas on what they would like to see in upcoming issues. So it's like they have direct input into what the next issues will hold.
Pull out posters.
Yes.
That you can put on your wall. And pop-up books. And choose your own adventure. Those are the three things I want to see.
He actually had an anonymous idea box, so anyone who didn't want to say their ideas out loud could put them on a piece of paper and slip them in the box. One of the ideas put in there was send us money in the magazines. So someone's already thinking about saving up for college, maybe.
Yeah, well, that would be like a reversal of most magazines.
Right.
You know, we'll pay you to get our magazine. Well, that sounds exciting. That's always a lot of fun. That camp goes on for a few weeks here. This is a Philadelphia Youth Camp at the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, which we're broadcasting to you from. Also, last night in the world of sports, ESPN gave out their awards, the ESPY Awards, and it was hosted by former football player Peyton Manning, also a noted commercial pitch enthusiast. I think everybody likes Peyton Manning. even if you're not a big football fan, he's just, I think he's a likable guy and he's a funny guy.
Yeah, he did a wonderful job of even using self-deprecating humor. At one point he was saying, you know, my career's over. I don't need to obsess over every detail. So after watching a previous presentation of the ESPYs for the 9th time, I realized I could just relax. I'm retired now. But then he's like cueing the lights. He's telling the cameraman to move back on the angle. He's telling the pyrotechnics guy when to set off the fireworks and all that stuff. So clearly he has not quite given up grip of the control that he had during his playing days.
Yeah.
And then he also joked about how many commercials he's in, like you mentioned. And he even did the fist pump, and there was a cha-ching sound that came over the speakers when he did that.
Yeah, those guys, if they're good commercial pitchmen, they make a lot of money doing that long after their playing days. The probably the most enjoyable part of the show, I think, for many of us was he fired a shot at Kevin Durant during his monologue. Now, the monologue, they come out and they sort of make fun of people in the audience, and it's supposed to be good-natured, but it can be a little bit cutting, I guess. And so Peyton Manning praised the United States women's gymnastics team that brought home gold at the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. And then Manning said, our gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year. And, of course, the crowd laughed. There was, you know, a little bit of the ooh. And they show on the Jumbotron the picture of Kevin Durant's face, and he looked furious.
Right.
I mean, the question is, was he playing along with it to try to make it more funny, or was he actually upset? Don't know, but it was a funny joke, I thought. And then they, of course, Manning continued. He said, I've got to tell you, I don't think you'd start for that team, Kevin. And then he said, Russell Westbrook, what do you think? And they showed a shot of Westbrook, who just tried to play it cool. But so anyway, they played that up, and social media had a field day with that activity.
It was just absolutely brutal to watch that. I didn't even see it live, but I watched it probably 10 times in a row, and every time I just cringed and I got chills from it, because you can just imagine being up there on stage and telling a joke like that and then just having a guy who is really thinking violent thoughts about you probably. Durant was so mad, and then obviously Durant, you could pretty much see his heart shattering in front of everyone, in front of thousands of people and then millions of people watching on TV. Just a really embarrassing moment for him. He definitely did not take it in stride, did not see the humor in it. I did think, though, Peyton Manning absolved himself of all blame in this situation, because before he even started joking about any athletes, he said, my producers tried to get me to tell these jokes about the athletes tonight. I'm not going to do that. They're just terrible. Here's a few terrible jokes that they were trying to get me to tell. And then he proceeded to tell all of them, despite him saying that they were really insulting.
Right.
So pretty smooth way of going about it there. And, you know, everyone has been joking about Durant leaving for probably the greatest team ever, the greatest regular season team ever, at least. They won 73 out of 82 games the year before he went there. You have to be able to understand that people are going to joke about you for that. And if you have no guilt about your decision, you should be able to laugh at it too.
It was quite the moment. That's what they're always going for, is you go for a moment that becomes viral and people talk about. Russell Westbrook, our own Oklahoma City Thunder player, he won ESPN's Male Athlete of the Year. So that was neat to see him win, and he accepted it in some sort of a dress shirt and sweatpants combination. He's known for his fashion prowess, if you want to call it that. He's unique.
I saw someone online who was very observant and actually pointed out that Durant and Westbrook appeared to be wearing the exact same sweatpants at the event, except for Durant's were a slightly darker shade. But it's just pretty funny how maybe they're still of like mind after playing all those years together.
Well, there's one of the, I guess, I don't know, one of the big things that people get interested in is it's not just the basketball games themselves. It's after the fact where the athletes dress up in all kinds of costumes, basically. I mean, they're trying to be very fashionable, but of course it's usually pretty out there, pretty extreme. And I always remember Russell Westbrook wearing the shirt with the fish on it, like the fishing lures or whatever it was.
just a classic shirt.
Yeah.
That's actually probably one of his better ones, because it's an interesting design, but at the same time, it's not literally flashy. It doesn't have sequins all over it or something like that. He's not wearing a matador's cloak. so I thought that shirt was one I was tempted to buy.
the fishing lure shirt, yeah. And then for those that follow Summer League in the NBA, Alonzo Ball had a really good game last night, 30-some-odd points, almost triple-double, and they won. So he's kind of starting to show out a little bit. People did notice that he wasn't wearing his own shoes. He was wearing Nikes last night.
Oh.
Because he's got the big baller brand shoes that cost like $500, $400. And for some reason, he wore the Nikes last night. So that caused a little bit of controversy as well.
Maybe he hadn't gotten custom fitted yet with his big baller brand shoes.
I don't know.
We have to be patient with him. He'll learn the ways. You can't commit a sin like that wearing Nikes if you have your own separate brand.
So everyone was all over that. There's a list here that's sort of interesting. You might be interested in this. It's from Forbes. It's the most valuable sports teams in the world in 2017. Most of them are from the NFL. Do you have a guess at the most valuable team?
Well,
NFL team.
Dallas Cowboys.
Yes, Dallas Cowboys. They're number one. They're worth $4.2 billion, apparently. And when Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys in 1989, he paid $150 million for them, including $10 million to cover deferred salaries. Built the club into the most valuable team in sports. It's worth $4.2 billion. Second straight year, the Cowboys lord over all the other teams. So it's interesting because it's not always about wins and losses. Some of these teams are worth a lot, but they don't win. So it's kind of funny how that works out. The Cowboys lead 29 NFL teams among the world's 50 most valuable. Only the Bengals, Lions, and the Bills miss the cut. They're still valuable, but they're just not in the top 50.
Right. Not surprised by that. The Bills have never won a championship. The Cowboys at least have a storied history. They became America's team. The Bills have become infamous for losing four straight Super Bowls. They came second place 4 years in a row.
Yep, they almost did it. They say you can credit the massive profitability across the league. Every team turned a profit of at least $26 million in 2015. NFL owners are also in line for a windfall from the relocations of the Rams, Chargers, and Raiders. The other 29 teams will each receive more than $50 million in relocation fees. With none of that money shared with the players. So I don't know how it works that way or why it works that way. But if you're going to get $50 million because a team moves, I'd be like, yeah, go ahead and move. Move them. They're getting big-time money from this.
Well, it's no wonder that every single owner seems to vote unanimously to let other franchises move when they try to. If you're going to get all that money and keep all of that money, it's a pretty good deal for you.
It is. Number one here, Dallas Cowboys, $4.2 billion. After that's New York Yankees, $3.7 billion. Third is Manchester United soccer team, $3.69 billion. Four is Barcelona, another soccer team, I believe, $3.64 billion. Then five is Real Madrid, $3.58 billion. So a lot of soccer up at the top. And then six is the Patriots. Seven is the Knicks. Eight is the New York Giants. Nine is the San Francisco 49ers, and they're tied with the Los Angeles Lakers of the NBA. Oklahoma City Thunder, not in the top 50.
Oh, well, see, that just goes to show you that winning doesn't play into it. The Thunder hasn't won a championship yet, but they've only been around for 9 years, and they have had consistent success at the very top, at least.
Yeah, well, and within the top 50, even though they're not right up at the top there, the Cleveland Browns are valuable.
Wow.
The Cleveland Browns.
Whew.
You think, how? They have hardly won anything. I mean, the last few, I know they were good back in the 80s. I think that was the last time. And even then, they weren't that good. But didn't they just have a season where they didn't win a game? Or did they squeak out one?
They might have squeaked out one. I'm trying to remember if they actually went 0-16 or not. But either way, they have been atrocious for a pretty long time. Their fans, though, you have to give them credit, are very, very dedicated to the team. And that probably would be a reason why they'd bring in so much revenue still.
Yeah, and I guess all its merchandise, it's TV contracts, it's all kinds of things. So it's interesting. You can look at a team and think, oh, they're terrible, and you know, and they may be, but they're still making a ton of money.
And if that's the case, there's not a whole lot of incentive to try to do everything you can to win. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, how many jobs can you have where you can just be perpetually bad but still make a ton of money?
Not very many. Usually in the field of entertainment, and that's about it.
Yeah. This is a headline here from the Charlotte Observer. Verizon, if you have Verizon for your phone, or for, I guess, whatever, they say personal data of 6 million users, Verizon users, have been leaked online. Human error, whoopsies, caused the leak, Verizon told CNN. The error is a misconfigured security setting on a cloud server. They always want you to put everything on the cloud, but it can be stolen, I suppose.
Right.
made customer phone numbers, names, and some PIN codes publicly available online. CNN Tech reported PIN codes are used to confirm the identity of people who call for customer service. No loss or theft of customer information occurred, Verizon says. Cybersecurity firm UpGuard found the leak. UpGuard initially reported the error could impact up to 14 million accounts. So that's a risk we all run. We have to have networks, and we have to, you know, use phones and so forth, but there's a chance your data can get stolen.
So obviously the advancements in technology are largely positive, but here's a case where wouldn't you rather have your data on paper locked in a file cabinet in your house? So at least if someone wanted to get to it, they'd have to break into your house. It would be a lot more difficult for people to steal data if it were not just floating around in the cloud.
Yeah, it's obviously a personal security issue, but it's also a national security issue because so much the United States, obviously, or all nations, I guess, we do rely on networks, we rely on computing systems, and of course, that's been in the news, right? Russian hacking, supposedly. So we are vulnerable to data breaches.
Yeah, we really are. And you see that obviously on a level of Verizon customers who are not very happy, but if you talk about nationally, that's where it really becomes an issue. And as great as America is, we are far behind a lot of other nations when it comes to cybersecurity or even our ability to counterattack in cyber warfare. If it came to that, Russia and China appear to be very far ahead of us, which is a pretty big problem.
So if you have Verizon, just got to pay attention, I guess. See if your info is out there. And I get emails, usually a couple times a week, where it's a scam, but they're trying to come across like they're an actual company. Like, oh, we're PayPal or we're eBay or we're something. And, oh, can you sign in again and enter your info because this, that, or the other? And I think most of us we've seen enough to know, like, that's not legitimate. But it catches people, and that's why they keep trying it. So you have to be really aware, make sure you really pay attention to what you're logging into.
Yeah, I get those types of emails all the time, even emails from friends, but clearly their account has been hacked because all it says is, hi, Grant, and there's a link, and there's nothing else.
Right.
Clearly that is something that you should not click on in your inbox. You might want to copy and paste the link elsewhere. Maybe that would work instead.
Yeah, whenever I get those, I usually email the person and say, hey, you just got hacked. So,
oh, that's helpful.
Because they're good, sending out a bunch of junk from your thing. And yeah, the first time that happened, it really caught me off guard. I thought, why would they send this to me? You know, I didn't click on the link, but I could see what was like being offered within the link, sort of. And it was sent to an odd list of people. And I just thought, what? And then, of course, oh, it's a scam. Animal attacks. What are with the animals? Why are they so angry?
They're getting bold. I don't think they have enough to fear in us anymore.
This is a couple of stories about that. Shark attacks 2017. Santa Cruz beaches shut down after large great white shark rips through a kayak. It's like out of a movie.
Yeah.
Beachgoers are prohibited from visiting a stretch of the Santa Cruz coastline in California after a kayaker was attacked by a great white shark on Tuesday. As part of the city's official shark incident action plan, I'd love to get in on that. Talk about that with them. At least 1 mile of the coastline has been closed for the next 4 days, according to a statement from the Santa Cruz police. Great white sightings have been occurring more regularly off both the west and east coast recently. In May alone, 25 great white sharks were spotted in waters near Capistrano Beach in Orange County, while at least 6 of the big fish were spotted near Cape Cod in the same month. Some more sightings.
Well, we often get ridiculed here in Oklahoma for being landlocked, and yet we're avoiding those aggressive sharks, so I don't have any problem with it.
That's when, if you start seeing sharks show up in your local lake, that's when you've got to be concerned.
We have someone trying to sabotage us, dropping them off there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know, you know, if it's more than normal, but it does seem like it is. Related to that, they say why alligator attacks are spiking in Florida. There has been a recent spate of alligator attacks in southwest Florida, and the weather is partially to blame, they think. On July 9th, a 71-year-old woman was airlifted to a hospital after she was attacked by a 10-foot alligator at the Shadowwood Preserve gated community in Fort Myers. The attack came just days after another gator nearly bit the arm off of a golf ball diver in Charlotte County Golf Course Lake. That's a job for somebody. They dive in, they find the old golf balls. That's awesome.
That is a fun job unless
the shark bites
unless you get caught by a gator or a shark or
yeah,
something.
Right, right. Alligator, sorry. I was still thinking about sharks. They say last week an alligator reportedly bit a 10-year-old boy vacationing in Arcadia. Not Arcadia Lake, by the way. That's not far from where we are here. They say a number of factors are contributing to the spike in attacks. Alligators are more active when the temperatures rise, they say. And that fact, combined with this being a popular time of year for people to recreate... I don't know what they meant, but that's not the right word.
Recreation in some way for,
yeah,
for recreation.
Recreate. To recreate? Have you ever heard that?
Possibly.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
But you have, and you just don't want to make me look bad. For people to recreate near the water creates the potential for human-alligator interactions. Officials confirm that there have been 16 bite incidents so far this year in Florida, equaling the statewide record for attacks in a year, which was set in 2001. So alligator attacks are up, shark sightings are up for sure, and some attacks, and then monkeys are going crazy. So it's all in the coastal areas.
Yeah, the coastal areas, maybe that gives some credence to the climate change alarmists and seeing how animals are reacting. And that's probably a big part of their point, just the way that the wildlife is responding to whatever it might be. But if you have animals going nuts, then people are going to look for a reason for that.
Yeah. I'm upset by that word, recreate.
Recreate, recreate. I
very
think those
close.
Those two things have very different meanings, and so it all comes down to the pronunciation, too.
I have never heard somebody say, I'm going to recreate.
I haven't either. It's strange.
Strange. This is a study that I think is worth paying attention to, studyfinds.org. And I think a lot of people already know this, but it's good to look at. Common household chemicals linked to chronic disease in men, study finds. They did a survey where they tested the urine samples of men 35 years of age and older. And I think that it was around 90% of them had these chemicals in their bodies. Phthalates, I guess. A team of researchers from the University of Adelaide and South Australian and Medical Research Institute carried out the research focusing on phthalates, which are common chemicals that most of us come into contact with daily. They're in consumer goods, including children's toys, food packaging, and medications. And they can cause a whole lot of problems, and they're getting in people's bloodstreams. So you have to pay attention to what's in your home because it causes chronic disease.
I have heard a little bit about these types of issues. Apparently, certain types of chemicals make both men and women androgynous, to where they start to look somewhere in between the two genders and not definitively like one or the other. It is alarming that any company would allow such chemicals to be in their products when they are just so physically destructive.
Yeah, it is. Some of the ways that these can get into your system, well, they say previous research has found also that men who frequently ate processed foods, drank sodas, and consumed fewer fruits and vegetables have higher levels of these phthalates as well. But they can come from microwaving food using plastic products. I guess some things are considered microwave safe. You have to kind of look into that, but the plastic gets into the food. Children sucking or chewing on soft plastic vinyl products. Got to look for that. Rattles, pacifiers, bottles, teethers, things like that. So they say read labels. If unsure, call the manufacturer. And I guess you can look at the back and they'll have the little, like, it's kind of like a triangle. And there's a certain rating for the plastic level or the phthalates level. And you have to kind of look at that. I mean, if you can believe it, if you can believe that they're giving you an accurate deal. But anyway, it is something to pay attention to because it can cause some real problems.
Yeah, it really can. That is one of many reasons why it's hard to just lay back and enjoy life too much now for a lot of people who are paranoid. If you think that everything that goes into your mouth or that touches you or that your baby plays with could alter your health for the rest of your life, it's not too pleasant of a mindset to have.
Yeah, they say very few studies have examined the health effects of phthalates on humans and lab animals. The exposure has been found to be associated with numerous reproductive health and developmental problems, such as early onset of puberty, interfering with the male reproductive tract development, interfering with natural functioning of the hormone system, lower testosterone levels in adolescent males, and a few other issues. So those plastics, they're all around, and you have to be careful. They can be, again, they're phthalates. It's spelled P-H-T-A-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S. So it's spelled kind of weird, but that's how they pronounce it, phthalates. and you can look on products to see if they're in there. They might have other names as well. There's a PDF that is at this website, studyfinds.org, that gives you some more specific information. Might be worth looking at just to be on the safe side with some of these chemicals.
It looks like there's only really one part that we can control without at least a lot of diligence into each product we buy, and that is to avoid the processed foods and the lack of fruits and vegetables. That's something that we all sort of, for the most part, we would have that under our own control, even though even some of those more healthy things could have some unhealthy ingredients as well.
They did a study recently, I think CNN did it, about fast food and who consumes it, because there was this idea out there that people that are more impoverished eat fast food, and they found out that that's not true. Like, everybody eats fast
right.
food. It didn't matter really how much money people had. They were eating fast food. I saw a story, I think it was yesterday, there's an NFL football player, and he said he was trying to get his body in better condition. He's about 30 years old, and he says he really needs to start paying attention to his body better. And one of the thing he did is try to cut out the fast food, because he said, you know, he's hungry, he wants to eat now, he likes it, it tastes good, and he would just go load up at all of his favorite fast food joints. But it's going to take a toll, especially, you know, and when you're young and a professional athlete, you can burn through stuff pretty quickly, but it does take a toll on the body.
That's true. The common perception is that fast food is cheaper than anything you can buy in the grocery store, and yet if you look in the grocery store, there are some really good deals. Maybe not always on the healthiest products, but at least healthier than fast food. So it's not like anyone who has less money is forced to get fast food, but it does save time. It's already made for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big part of it is the convenience of it more than lack of money.
And it's delicious.
It is so good.
at least our brains think it is. I think we're being tricked chemically. But, you know, it's interesting, too, because I think we say fast food, it's easy to think about, you know, McDonald's or someplace, but pretty much any restaurant you go to, unless it's pretty nice, it's going to be fast food. You know,
sure.
You might pay more for it. You're still eating fast food, though.
Right. Those restaurants are everywhere, and that is maybe it's a symptom of the age where we're all rushing around and trying to save time in any way possible. Fast food restaurants are going to flourish in that type of environment.
This is an interesting story. It's kind of related to some of these health issues. It's from Time magazine from a couple weeks ago. And the article is called The Drug Cascade. They say there's a boom in prescription painkillers, and that's what drove the opioid crisis that we're in. So what do they do? How do you fix it? Make a pill to counteract the opioid.
Right.
So you can sell more pills. It's called The Drug Cascade. They say when it comes to killing pain these days, a prescription for a high-powered opioid is no longer enough. Once you're taking, say, Oxycontin or hydrocodone, if I said that right, on a regular basis, you'll probably get pills for the side effects. Pills to control the nausea, pills to regulate your testosterone production, and pills to help you use the restroom when the drugs numb the receptors in your intestines that are supposed to help move things along. So, how many pills are you taking now? A bunch. If you become addicted to painkillers, there are pills to help you stop taking the pills. Think about that for a second. A pill to help you stop taking a pill.
Now, do you get addicted to that pill as well? That's the real question. I think the average American is on something like 12 or 20 different prescriptions.
Unreal. Yeah, they say they'll give you a pill to help you stop taking the pill by reducing the symptoms of withdrawal. And if you take too many pills, there's a pill for that too. Or rather, there's a nasal spray or an injection or a $4,100 auto injector that announces through a tiny speaker how to use it to reverse the effects of an overdose. In the medical world, this phenomenon is known as a drug cascade. And with hundreds of millions of opioid prescriptions flooding American homes, the opioid cascade has become, they say, over the past 5 years, a multi-billion dollar business. All of these different medicines just start to pile on. In some cases, government initiatives have been the force behind more demand for drugs that treat addiction and overdose. With 33,000 Americans dying of opioid overdoses in 2015, state and federal guidelines have encouraged doctors to co-prescribe opioids with a drug that reverses an overdose just in case. And so then now the police and the first responders have to stock up on these overdose drugs. So the doctor will say, okay, I'm going to give you an opioid, and then I'm also going to prescribe you this in case you overdose on it.
Ugh.
But it's all money, money, money. They're making a ton on it. It's called the drug cascade.
Yeah, talk about an obsession or an epidemic in treating the effects. Those people are not even looking at what's causing it in the first place. They're going to the very end of the line, trying to treat the problem after the person's already on dozens of different prescriptions already. That just is not smart. There's clearly something that is done, something that started the process early on, and you have to get back to the root of it instead of, you know, going along with these money-making scams. These businesses actually have a pretty big incentive not to find a cure, because if you don't find a cure, you have way more pills you can sell.
Oh, for sure. And one of the big debates right now is the healthcare issue, right? And how much is it going to cost and all this? Well, what if you got to the point where you didn't need all these pills? How much would a healthcare plan save? Or you know, how much would that save in a healthcare plan in terms of what you have to spend? Probably a lot. They say when roughly 91 Americans are dropping dead every day of opioid overdoses, wow, in their homes, in their cars, it has a way of grabbing officials' attention. 91 Americans will die today from, wow, opioid addiction, from overdoses. Here's a couple of numbers about what this all costs. The annual market for substance abuse treatment in the U.S. in 2015, $4.4 billion. Projected annual market for substance abuse treatment in the U.S. by 2024, $12.4 billion. It'd be a good job to get into because you're going to make a ton of money. Global revenue from opioid-induced constipation drugs in 2014. This is just how much has been made from making pills that help people use the restroom properly when they're on opioid. $1.9 billion.
Oh.
Projected global revenue from opioid-induced constipation drugs in 2022 is going to be $2.8 billion, so it'll be almost another $1 billion. So, you know, you do have to start looking at what the motivations are for some of the healthcare, some in the healthcare industry, or some in the, you know, this type of industry. When I say healthcare, I don't mean like the nurse.
Right.
I mean the people making the dope.
Right. And it is clearly a huge scheme that has had a lot of success. If you look at the projections, and they're only projected to go up substantially, the amount of money spent on these different things, what does that actually mean? That we're all getting way more unhealthy, or we're being convinced even more that we need these things that we actually don't? It's probably a combination of both, but both of those things are big problems. Getting more unhealthy is something that is usually under our own control, and so if we allow ourselves to deteriorate, then we have to get into paying for this, or at least we're convinced that we think we need that.
Yeah, I mean, if we were living in a society where people were living 200 years now, but people were healthy like never before, then I guess you'd look at it and say, wow, well, this is great. But people still die.
Yeah.
People are still sick. People still have all these problems, probably more than in the past. But now they just want to sell you a pill for it. And then people say, well, I can't afford the health care. We need all this socialized medicine. Well, but a lot of it is going to these types of pills and that. So there's a lot there. And that's why when the healthcare debate comes up, there's a lot of money involved, and there's a lot of influence that's being pushed behind the scenes, obviously, because people don't want to lose these huge, huge dollar industries.
And if we really think about it, are the pills actually doing their jobs? Are they actually providing healthier, happier lives? I can't imagine that taking 20 different types of pills, probably more than one of most of those every single day, or else you think you're going to die, could ever possibly be a happy existence at all.
Yeah, it'd be really a fascinating study. I know people wouldn't probably want to do it, but take somebody that's on all these different pills and just say, well, why don't you just stop taking them? I mean, in some cases, they might be so far gone or so far addicted to them that it would have adverse, you know, effects, but I don't know. In some cases, people might feel better. Give them
exactly.
give them a placebo. Just right. Tell them, like, you just have to take this one thing, and, you know, it'll solve everything, and it's like a green bean. There's that commercial, right, where they're like, wouldn't it be nice if you could eat, you know, one vegetable, and they're kind of making fun of it. I'm like, well, wouldn't it be better to eat that one vegetable and just leave the pills alone?
Absolutely it would.
At least at some point in life.
They can make fun of it all they want to, but they're just trying to mask the fact that healthy dieting, healthy, you know, a lifestyle that's healthy, not too sedentary, and really not even too active. There's a balance there, but trying to find that healthy medium is a much better alternative to these types of destructive, really killer pills.
Yeah, kill pills. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We are not sponsored by pharmaceutical companies.
Obviously.
The Kia David program is coming up here in a bit. Make sure you listen for that. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Richard Palmer today from Edstone, England. You can hear that here in a bit. Also, archives at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. And stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story, how did he know about Russia and China? Herbert W. Armstrong predicted Xi Jinping's comment that Russia-China relations are at their best time in history. That's stunning but not surprising. Related to that, the Russia-China axis is here, and he was right. Grant, you've got a write-up for us here about helicopter parents. Is it really child neglect?
It does seem like the paradox here is that possibly more than ever, parents are actually spending loads of time with their kids, but it's in a way that is possibly not as beneficial as it could be. For example, you schedule a child's day so that there can be not even a second spared for boredom of any kind.
Yeah.
You send them off to a dance lesson, a sports practice, an after-school club, and the whole day is regimented like this. But really, what is taking place is that we're paying other people to educate our own children. We're sending them off to these activities that are educating kids, but we're not spending the time to help them in those areas as parents.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's neat to get into activities and you learn a lot and they're good experiences. But then there is a certain point where maybe it could be too much, mm-hmm. to where if you're not having the parental child relationship develop, that could be a problem. Helicopter parent is a pretty new term, right? Like, and if I understand it correctly, it's basically like this parent that just kind of hovers and they're
right.
Just micromanaging everything of the day. Is that a correct?
Yeah. And that's a wonderful visual that you get from that type of that type of term as well. You can have a helicopter hovering right before landing just over the kid's head, and they can see everything the kid's doing. They have absolute control over the child's schedule. A big drawback of that though, is that once the child turns 18 and is legally an adult, he or she hasn't really made any decisions for themselves at all, because their parents have decided every activity they do, when they do it. The only thing they've had to really learn how to do, as this article brings out, is be dressed and in the car at a certain time.
Yeah. Go back if you haven't listened to it. Listen to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show from yesterday. Stephen Fleury talked about, you know, just young people and teenagers in particular, and how it is good that they do have some challenges in life, like some hard things, because it's easy to just sort of insulate them from everything, which to a point, I mean, you want to do some of that, of course, but so much so that, like you say, by the time they're free, you know, and they're on their own, they're 18, or whatever, you know, however that works for them, they kind of don't know what to do with themselves. They haven't had, they've never made a decision because it's been handed to them every step of the way. And while that might be good to some extent, they still have to learn how to make choices and plan their day and follow a schedule and overcome challenges without somebody saying, this is exactly how you do it, you know, come with me.
Right. Yeah, this article does talk about the emergence of the pajama boy, which is the 30-something man-child.
Pajama boy, I love
who,
that.
Who still lives with parents. And the quote here says, who never quite launched into adulthood, our prototypical basement-dwelling permanent adolescent, went to an expensive college but didn't acquire any sort of ability to write or think. He had a childhood of expensive enrichment activities but somehow was never enriched. He doesn't work, make anything, or want to. He lives on video games and fantasy and is increasingly unlikely to marry or become a parent, and he has a good chance of being heavily medicated for anxiety and depression. An interesting part of a life without challenges or responsibility.
Yeah, this really, that's true in a lot of ways. One thing I've noticed is the difference between myself and, say, you know, people that are kind of coming up today. And I didn't have quite as many activities as what a lot of people might have today. And so there's probably pros and cons to that. But one thing that was good for myself was that because there weren't a lot of, like, my day wasn't full of one activity, the next. When I had a particular activity that was coming up, and it's usually a sporting contest because that's kind of what I was doing, like, I really thought about it. I focused on it. I practiced for it. I was really dying to go do it. And then when I did it, I loved it, and then I'd think about it afterwards. And I do see some kids, it seems like, where they're just kind of going through it and they're going to be on to the next activity. They're not putting the value maybe on what they're in at that moment because, mm-hmm. well, it's just one in a long list of things that I'm going to do today. And that like passion and desire from them personally sometimes seems to be missing.
Yeah, it's almost a robotic checking off of the task list instead of actually taking the time for self-reflection to analyze what you just did and see how you can do it better, or what you did well that you'd want to repeat the next time you did that same activity. There's no time for that if you constantly have every minute of the day scheduled. And a lot of the time, the children don't have a choice in that. And it does cost them their autonomy, their self-discipline, their ability to transition into adulthood, it says in this article. Kids who have everything decided for them have no idea how to decide for themselves when the time comes.
Do they talk in the article, or maybe you just have a thought on this? You know, for the parents, like people are trying to do. I have kids. I have them in things, and you know, you try to get them in activities to a point. Is it sort of the age old tale of trying to keep up with the Joneses? Like you got to have your kid in everything because everybody else does. Is there some thought on that?
Probably. This article doesn't talk about that as much, but mm-hmm. it definitely does seem like parents who perhaps would have liked to have done something while they were younger assume that their children want the exact same objectives in their own lives. And so they put their children into those specific particular activities and try to live vicariously through the kids, pushing them a lot of the times, pushing them in such a way that alienates them from even wanting to be in that activity at all.
Yeah, that does. It is interesting. I don't know if it's always the case. It's probably not always the case, but you do see situations where people really love, like, say, a sport, and they really give it their all. But, you know, their parents weren't that interested in it. And then you see on the flip side sometimes where the parent was really into it and the kid just ends up not liking it because mm-hmm. it's too much pressure, or it's too, I don't know, it's not fun anymore or something. And that's not in every case, but I have seen that happen. Even one of my son's baseball coaches, he still likes the sport, but his dad pushed him super hard, and he just got to the point where he kind of burned out on it.
Right. So, well, we did talk about that a little bit before the show, too. There is a balance between a parent who is always there, always at every game, screaming at his son. I had a couple of teammates when I was younger whose parents were like that, and in a way, I could actually appreciate how involved the parents were. But at the same time, their kids weren't responding well to it. That might have been their own fault as well. But the kids were throwing a fit on the field because they were so mad that their parents were yelling at them during the game. And then at the same time, you had parents you never saw the entire season. And those kids were actually some of the very worst on the team. So you have the kids who do well in the activity because their parents are forcing them to, but they actually hate the activity. And then you have the ones who are usually the worst on the team. The parents are never around. They expect to just drop their kids off at the practice or the game, and it'll magically work itself out without the parents ever spending time playing catch with them or anything right. like that outside of practice and the games.
So I guess the difficulty here with, say, this helicopter parent, where it becomes actually some child neglect, is that it's subtle to where, as a parent, you could think, well, I took them, I was there, and that's really great, but it depends, I guess, probably on how engaged you are. Like, it's easy to take somebody to a place and then just sit there and be on your phone. I mean, I've been guilty of that. You know, to where you're not actually all that engaged with what is happening. And so this is sort of a subtle thing, because you'd think as a parent, like, well, I put them in things, I took them places, that's great. But there is a chance, there's a danger that all the activities, all the constant action robs you of valuable interaction with your child, you know, meaningful interaction besides just being like the taxi driver.
Yeah, that is something we could all as parents analyze, is just exactly how much are we doing it? How much are we putting kids in activities because we care for their well-being versus how much we're just doing it because we don't want to spend that amount of time. We would rather spend the money and have the time freed up for ourselves while someone else teaches the kids the exact same things we could have taught them at home.
Yeah. I talked about this the other week, I guess. I saw this show on TV where this guy was talking about his upbringing, and he was an older gentleman. So his dad like knew all sorts of things about like science and engineering and construction. And they did all this stuff together and they worked together. And so this guy knew how to do all those things. And it is nice when the parent can pass the skills on. In some cases you can't because you don't know. You just aren't skilled in it yourself. You need to find good teachers. But it is nice to go out and spend time. And that's probably the biggest need is to spend quality time with the kids and not just try to pay somebody else to do it always. Sometimes you have to, and that's fine, but it's good to get out there and get into the action with them too.
Right. There is a type of time spent with the kids that goes beyond just driving them to activities. One thing that is often overlooked now probably in a lot of homes is actually a sit-down family meal where you share ideas, you share how your day went, you explain your thoughts, feelings, and desires with family members and friends, and they can give their input, especially as a child listening to parents and grandparents. They could learn a lot about different experiences that their elders have had and could pass on to them. So hopefully they don't have to learn certain things the hard way, and hopefully they can gain some insight without necessarily trying and failing at the same thing 100 times without knowing how their parents would have handled the same thing.
Yeah, talking. Like that's kind of the missing maybe component in some of this is if you can be really busy and be very active and so forth, but if you're not talking and getting to know each other, well, it's like a friendship. I mean, you know, if you spend a lot of time with somebody but you don't ever really talk to them, then they're kind of an acquaintance that you see at an activity. Yeah. And you don't want that to be the case between the parents and the kids where you're an acquaintance. Mm-hmm. You frequent the same places, but you don't really talk about anything.
Right. And it is striking to see how much society has changed in the last century or so with, it used to be where if a father was a craftsman or a merchant, he would raise his sons to do the same type of work, and they would all be in the same, they would all be in the family trade together. And of course the daughters would be doing a lot of the housework and then caring for the animals and things like that at the family farm. Whenever you have jobs going away from the home and you industrialize a lot of jobs, then everyone in the family goes off to work in different places. Then you have the big wars that this country was involved in that in some cases required women to leave the home and start working themselves. Now you have a situation where both parents are out of the home. The child comes home to an empty house. There might be a microwavable dinner on the table, and they can go spend the evening in front of the television. So that is a huge difference. It's not time spent at work. It's not time spent at home. Maybe there's some activities they're driven to, but it's not like those close family bonds are being built as much as they used to.
Yeah, takes effort. Takes effort and time and interest, putting your interest into it. That's interesting. Right up about the helicopter parents problem there. A couple other notes to mention today before we close. Of course, immigration's been a big issue here in the United States. Talking about that, here's some numbers you might find interesting. The number of undocumented immigrants who have been removed from the U.S. since January 2017, so they're looking at President Trump's tenure here pretty much, 88,000. That's how many have been removed from the country. So they don't give info on how that stacks up to past times, but that's the number. Also, as far as the increase in immigration arrests in the first 5 months of the Trump administration, 39% more. So it's been somewhat effective, I guess. And I guess with all the Russia talk, there hasn't been a lot of talk about the immigration lately. But it looks like maybe that is improving somewhat as far as not having so many in the U.S.
Well, a big problem is that many of the people in the media don't actually approve of undocumented immigrants, as they call them, being deported. Probably a better term is illegal aliens. Undocumented immigrants gives the impression that they should be here, but they just happen to be missing one piece of paper or
right.
something like
Where
that.
Where did I put that?
It's not at all what the case actually is. But we've also heard how even just the threat of being deported more quickly and efficiently now has deterred a lot of people from even trying to come into this country in the first place.
Yeah. So it's kind of moving that direction. So we'll see how that continues. Also, we know, of course, Republicans and Democrats, they are not they don't agree with each other. 49% of Republicans and 55% of Democrats say that they are afraid of the opposite party. So about half they're actually afraid of the other party. I don't know. Maybe for good reason, maybe not. Depends what part of town you're in.
Well, obviously we've seen an increase in political violence, and so that's really hindering a lot of civilized discussion. And I don't know. The left does favor big government. They favor the government enforcing their beliefs on everyone else. That's something to be fearful of. I'm not so sure how it would be fearful to be governed by the right when they are more about staying out of other people's lives.
Their slogan should be, "We're right." Right? It's hard to fight against.
More ways than one.
Hard to fight against that. Here's some data you might find interesting. They say that forgetting things can make you smarter. Not on test day, it can't. A scientific paper in Neuron argued that forgetting outdated memories lets the brain clear out details that don't matter so people can adapt to newer information and make more intelligent decisions. So certain things you don't want to forget, but some things you do want to forget.
Well, it makes me feel a little bit better about all the things I've forgotten over the years. A lot of people will say, "Hey, remember that time 5 years ago we went out for dinner?" And I'll say, "I have no idea what you're talking about."
Yeah. Well, I'm that way with movies.
Mm-hmm.
If I watch a movie, I pretty much don't remember much about it after. I just don't care to retain it. I probably remember that I saw it, but I couldn't tell you the characters. I couldn't tell you much of what happened, you know, beyond maybe a very basic. Indiana Jones. Yeah, I remember they went, they found some stuff, you know. I remember sort of the gist, but some people really that gets locked away and they can recount whole segments of things. I can't do that. I don't choose to do it, I guess.
Well, it doesn't seem beneficial to retain that knowledge. It's more about the experience in the moment, especially if you go to a movie theater. That's a pretty awesome experience that we probably don't understand how great that is, but to retain every single detail and to bother to learn these fake languages that these characters speaking, it's just a tremendous waste of time.
Yeah, if you've ever looked on YouTube at, say, a clip from one of those, like, Lord of the Rings or something, there's quite a few arguments about the, like, what's the truth of the matter, but it's all fiction, but...
Yeah, exactly.
They go, and then people start arguing in the language. It's very confusing.
You said this word wrong in that language. Who cares?
I have a hard enough time with English, let alone some made-up dialect. If you're a coffee drinker like I am and you enjoy it, they say that light roast coffee may be better for you than dark roast. A study in the Journal of Medicine found that lighter coffee roasts had higher levels of some type of acid, they say. I'm not even going to try to read it. Which acts as an antioxidant, and the darker roasts don't have quite as many. I don't know. They come out with studies about coffee like every other day, and I don't know that they're ever conclusive.
Aren't the darker roasts usually more potent?
Usually.
The difference?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that alone would offset possibly some of the other health benefits of the light roast. Sometimes you just want a real kick.
Yep. Yeah, so it's they're always studying into the coffee, and I don't know that they're coming to any sort of conclusions. We talked yesterday a little bit about the laziest nations as far as people not moving about. Well, they say the study here shows that teens are as inactive as older people. Hmm. The teens aren't moving as much as they should be. A study of preventative medicine found that adolescents grew less active throughout their teen years, with 19-year-olds spending as much time being sedentary as 60-year-olds. Can you believe it? Half of teenage boys and 75% of teenage girls did not meet exercise recommendations of an hour of moderate activity per day. An hour of moderate activity. So you stop and think about that. You got 23 plus hours of pretty much being sedentary. That can't be good.
That is really horrible. And it's hard to even conceive how we have gotten to this point if you talk about even a decade or two ago when kids would just play outside all day long. And that was what they did all summer long. That's what they looked forward to during school was the PE break, the physical education class break. Now what people look forward to is looking at the phone or playing video games, and it obviously that's going to lead to a lot of health problems.
Yeah, it's amazing how times have changed. It used to be that you had to pretty much tie people down to not go outside and play when you were young. I know as you get to be a teen, it's a little different. You're not going to go play on the swings, but but typically then you start getting into sports or you start kind of making your way in those sorts of activities. And so to have a situation where a 19-year-old is as active or as inactive as a 60-year-old, Boy, imagine if people had to do manual labor of some kind. You know, just wouldn't be fit for it even.
Right. That would be probably devastating for a lot of young people to go through a day of that, and they'd probably be wiped out for a week. The way that our bodies have been deconditioned, we're not able to handle more intense activity, which makes us really, in a lot of ways, less useful as human beings.
Less healthy. There's a pill for that, though.
Just take the pill. It'll be fine.
The activity pill. Yeah, it is really interesting. So those are some stats that I thought you guys might find somewhat interesting. Just before the show, I saw a whole group of young people riding their bicycles right past the studio here. So they don't fit that category.
You can definitely say this youth camp is vastly different from the trend of kids sitting around all day. You have four activities during the day, usually one at night that mm-hmm. also involves some more physical activity. Pretty tiring day, so you sleep well, really well yep. at night, and then do it all again the next day.
Yeah, and you find out, lo and behold, you don't die.
You can actually do it.
You can actually move about, and it feels good, and you can go a little further sometimes than you think you could. Thanks for joining us here today on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on the way as well. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.